Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, welcome back, Mike Haas, Deuce McAllister. We are at the Rouses, 3711 Power Boulevard. It's a Rouses Markets Football Friday. Dips and wings, sushi, jambalaya. Rouses says everything you need to cover the spread. Another big weekend prep. Tulane, LSU, Saints on Sunday. And we're going to talk some more Saints in San Francisco. Evan Giddings joining us now. He's with the Believe 49ers podcast. Believe in the 49ers at Evan A. Giddings, G-I-D-D-D-D-I-N-G-S, joins us now. Evan, you're on with Mike Haas and Deuce McAllister. Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Good to be talking with you.
Well, we appreciate your time. So I'm looking at your latest injury list, just waiting for the Friday designations to come up. Trent Williams was a rest. Purdy, we know, is out. Juwan Jennings, I guess, and maybe Jordan James. I mean, is there anybody other than maybe Juwan Jennings that is probably not or close to not playing on Sunday?
Yeah, well, it's really good timing because Kyle Shanahan just got finished talking to the media, and the two players that were the highest questions outside of obviously Brock Purdy, who was officially ruled out, or Juwan Jennings, and Trent Williams. That was the other player that popped up on the injury report this week. He did not practice today and basically is going to be walking into Sunday with pretty much no practice reps. Now, a player of that age, 37, his caliber of play, don't necessarily worry too much about that if he's on the field, but in San Francisco, he has not allowed six pressures in a football game ever, and he did so week one in Seattle. So he clearly wasn't at his best and already hampered. I think that's probably the other big injury right now for the 49ers, especially when you consider they don't have George Kittle, and now they're relying on their backup quarterback, Mac Jones.
Yeah, I only thought that was a surprise because I thought they were resting Trent. Like he was like a veteran day of rest. But so I was surprised to see two DNPs, but three, you're right. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's pretty much a toss-up. I do think that Trent Williams is more likely to play than Juwan Jennings, but how the shoulder reacted this week is kind of a 50-50 call. Juwan Jennings was on the sideline in Seattle trying to get back in the game. He was having, ironically enough, Mac Jones on the sideline throwing him footballs, but he just couldn't get that full range of motion necessary to make the plays. I think not only in the passing game, but Juwan Jennings is a big part of what this team likes to do in the run game as far as being one of those blockers downfield. He was number one last year in PFF among wide receiving run blockers. So, I would lean more towards Trent Williams being on the field than Juwan Jennings. And if you're the Niners, you hope you might be able to get both of them out there.
Yeah, I definitely think that, you know, Trent will battle through it. You know, he's played with a various amount of injuries, and, you know, he's a Hall of Famer. And so, you know, unless he just cannot move, I see him trying to fight through it and be available. You know, one of the things that I definitely want to talk about is just the defense and at the level that they were able to play at up in Seattle, and just get your take on that unit. It looked like they are going to be a unit that brings a little bit more pressure, and we think that's just because of the DC. And not necessarily just because I don't have enough guys up front that can win in one-on-one situations, but I just want to get your take on that defense and how they have, you know, really fallen around, I guess, and not only preseason-wise, but really the first game.
Yeah, well, I think that point about the creativity from Robert Saleh is an astute point because that was something that they severely lacked last year. And I would even go back 2 years ago, even with them making the Super Bowl. This was a team that basically has relied for the last, I'd say, 6 years under Shanahan on a front four to get home, and they don't bring any blitzers. Last year, they were bottom three in the league. I believe they were bottom five in the league even when in the year they made the Super Bowl and lost to the Chiefs. So Robert Saleh, I think, has understood that this is a very youthful group, not a lot of experience. They're the second youngest defense in football, and you're just not going to have a ton of talent that can win up front one-on-one outside of Nick Bosa, so you got to bring extra guys. And I thought he did a pretty good job of deploying the defense in ways that confused Sam Darnold, in ways that were able to neutralize the Seattle Seahawks run game. And I think then you saw those playmakers on the back end make plays enough, not only to hold the Seattle Seahawks to 13 points and three of 10 on third downs, but make those game-winning plays. Like, at all three levels, you had Nick Bosa, who made the game-clinching sack and strip sack and recovery. You saw Fred Warner, the best middle linebacker in football, flying around, had a team high 8 tackles. And then on the back end, Diamador Lenore, their emerging cornerback, is someone who was targeted 7 times, did not allow a catch in pass coverage. So I think what Robert Saleh did is he provides confidence for a lot of these younger, inexperienced players, and then he allows the few superstars that he still has from yesteryear to make plays in the biggest moments.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Where is San Francisco on Mr. Mac Jones? Certainly Shanahan sees something in this resurrection that he can do things that maybe others can't. 52 games in his career, 44 picks. He's had 6 pick sixes in 5 years. Saints have played him a couple of times. But, you know, he played in the preseason. What's the level of confidence in Mac Jones?
Well, I think there's more confidence in Mac Jones as a backup quarterback than there's been of probably any quarterback that's backed up a Niners starter outside of Sam Darnold. But that year he only had to play week 17 when the one seed was already wrapped up. So I think people are feeling pretty good. Like, they can still not only win this game, but Brock Purdy is probably going to miss multiple weeks. You know, they might be able to steal a game at home against Arizona. I'm not as confident about that. And it's as much as it is about Mac Jones as it is about the surrounding cast. Like, we went through a couple of the injuries that even if Trent and Juwan are able to play, they're clearly not going to be 100%. You don't have George Kittle, who already – we saw, even with Brock Purdy, it was such a huge difference offensively, when he was not in the game against Seattle, both in the run and against the pass. Plus, this offensive line is not nearly as talented, even with Trent Williams, if he was 100%, than it's been in past years. So I think that Mac Jones is someone who I expect to make good decisions with the ball, execute Kyle Shanahan's offense. But if the New Orleans Saints, who got to Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals 5 times last week for sacks, if they apply pressure, I don't think that Mac Jones is under any condition going to be able to use his legs to evade pressure. So I think that Mac Jones is in a little bit of trouble this weekend against a New Orleans Saints defense that probably is better, at least showed in the first week better than a lot of people expected.
Kicking game. Yeah. What's your thoughts on it? We know that the move was made, but, you know, does it put them in at least at ease with what they've been able to do, or are there still some question marks there?
I mean, I think whenever you have a new kicker coming in, there's always going to be questions. The one positive about Eddie Pinheiro, who they brought in to replace Jake Moody, is he has experience with the special teams coordinator Boyer from his time in New York. And Pinheiro, though he doesn't have a big leg, is someone that is a north of 80% field goal kicker. Jake Moody was sub 75. So I think you're kind of trading range for consistency. And that's something the Niners, quite frankly, haven't had during the Jake Moody era of the last couple of years. So the kicking game, I think, is not necessarily a conversation we can close, because until I see this guy make some kicks, I'm still going to have my eyebrows raised a little bit. But I think Kyle Shanahan and the Niners are just looking at it. Okay, well, at the very least, we're not married to this guy. We finally got divorced from Jake Moody. We can stop making excuses for a guy not doing his job. And if this player comes in and does his job well, Eddie Pinheiro, we keep him. If not, then we go find the next guy. And special teams is kind of the revolving door, if you will.
And that's the situation if you're Pinheiro, because Moody was – I mean, he physically impacted San Francisco's play calling. in the second half. I mean, whether you would go for it or take a field goal, I mean, he was impacting your offense. Here's what I would tell you. I would give you a little Eddie Pinheiro stat. Spent a little time last night with Eddie. So in his career, he's 88% against the Saints. He's played them eight different times, once with Chicago, once with the Jets, six times with Carolina, eight times. He's kicked 16 field goals. He's missed one from 41 yards out in 23. In his career, he's an 88% field goal kicker. Against New Orleans, he's 94%. We want you to get Jake back. Get the Chargers and get Jake back. Because I was like, people go, oh, yeah. Because once you get down that road of, we went down that road in 21. You get a kicker, it doesn't work. We went through four kickers. Sometimes it's a revolving door. So you never know. And so I wanted to ask you about, you know, at least to me, it's ironic. You know, we spent so much time talking about Christian McCaffrey and the injury. Before the season, he gets 31 touches on Sunday, plays on 58 snaps, 76%, and now you're no Kittle, right? No Purdy, and not sure, you know, with Juwan and maybe even Jordan Watkins or James Jordan and some other players. I mean, how do you protect him, or is he just going to do it all? He's maybe your number three quarterback.
He literally was. I think it was three years ago in the NFC Championship game in 2022 when they brought Brock Purdy in after he tore his elbow. You're right. Christian McCaffrey is everything to the Niners. I do think that if there was one thing you could kind of nitpick about the W on Sunday in regards to Kyle Shanahan and his play calling, it's, you know, did we really need Christian McCaffrey to touch the ball 31 times? It was most of anybody in the NFL. And he popped up on the Thursday before with a calf injury, and you still rode him almost into the ground. Like, I understand that McCaffrey, even with bringing in Brian Robinson, is clear-cut the best back and best offensive weapon on this football team outside of maybe Kittle, but he's off the field. I just think there's some way you have to keep his workload at somewhat of a minimum. Now, that game on Sunday, they held the ball for 38 minutes, so they're clearly running more plays than their opponent. But that's kind of the 49ers' MO. They want to control the clock. They want to win time of possession. And I just feel like you have to involve Brian Robinson, maybe even Isaac Garendo, your third running back, into the game plan a bit more to keep McCaffrey from not touching it every single time he's on the field. And while you're right that he only played 75% of snaps, it also means that every team, when they're looking at the Niners, when McCaffrey's on the field, essentially, the ball is going to him. So I think it makes them also a little more easy to predict, though he himself is a hard player to certainly bring down. I think it's something that each and every week the Niners are going to have to try and wrestle with. How do we keep this guy upright? Because while Kittle could go down, while Trent could go down, there's a lot of people saying this week that the only player that can't go down for the 49ers is number 23, and I can understand why.
We feel the same way. So best of luck after this week. By the way, we'd like, if you could work this out, Purdy may be out for 2 to 5 weeks. In week six, you guys play at Tampa. Week seven, you're in Atlanta. So we need him back before week six and seven. So
concur.
Yeah, all right. Have a great year. We appreciate your time. Evan Giddings, at Evan A. Giddings, and that's the Believe in 49ers podcast. Have a great year.
Hey, anytime, fellas. Take it easy, boys.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.